Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Josh Hollinger on the dangers of and possible alternatives to sports betting for young men.
With the sports betting apps, it's pretty intentionally designed to be addicting. They show their hand on this when you see all the initial offers they give you, like bet $5 and we'll give you like $100 in free bets. Just get in here a little bit and we're pretty sure that you'll like this. They're telling you that it's going to be addicting. So I think they've kind of gamified it with the apps in a way that's pretty drawing, especially young men, but potentially anyone that uses the apps and starts to get into it.
Josh Hollinger next. Dort University economics professor Josh Hollinger says 50% of men aged 18 to 49 have a sports betting account, and he believes it's quite common even among Christian college students. Dort is a Christian college. In today's discussion with Spencer Dahlke, Professor Hollinger will give some scriptural principles which apply to sports betting and suggest some possible alternatives. His comments are found in the Gospel Coalition piece, Young Men, Sports Gambling, and a Better Way to Play.
First question, I suppose, is just laying the groundwork for our listeners who maybe aren't aware about how sports gambling has changed. The Supreme Court struck down the law that banned sports betting, I think, nationwide in 2018. I'm curious what you know about how the pastime has developed since then.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So before 2018, not allowed. After 2018, it started to open up. That created the possibility for states to legalize, and they've sort of done so in a staggered way increasingly over time. I think you can verify this, but we're roughly around half of states would allow sports betting now. And a majority of those that allow sports betting also allow the mobile apps where you can bet on FanDuel or Prize Picks or all those apps that you see in the advertisements all the time now.
Which makes sense. That's why I've been seeing all these ads nowadays for like people placing bets and things. How has your background in applied microeconomics helped you to understand what is happening with young men and the allure of sports gambling?
I wouldn't say like a specific focus that I've done a lot of my own research on in terms of like my background of trying to use statistics to analyze causal questions related to market activity. So my background is, broadly speaking, kind of labor economics. How do we allocate our time, our effort, our skills to productive things? I enjoy thinking about incentives and resource allocation in a pretty general way. And I think some of the basic frameworks of economics are useful for thinking about being stewardly with our resources, including sports betting. Even some of the stuff that I learned in undergrad about finance, I think I still have kind of carried with me as I think about some of these questions.
Do you have any like personal experience or friends of yours perhaps ever tried sports betting before?
For myself, no. My only experience in anything resembling sports betting would be like an annual pool for a fantasy football league, which is just a one-time thing with your friends. No one's taking a cut of it, right? We're just like putting a pretty small amount of money in the pot and then giving it to the people that finish in the top three or whatever. So that's the closest I've got to sports betting. I haven't talked with a lot of friends my age about making sports bets. Maybe, you know, I've heard of like a person here or there that bets in a pretty restricted, controlled way. I think what I've noticed increasingly is students talking about it. So as a college professor, I interact with a lot of college students, including young males, and that's just been increasingly common. I think you just hear about it all the time. Students will even just talk to me about sports betting before class and some of the smaller classes and like bets they're trying to make. What do you think about it? So that's been kind of a cool and interesting opportunity to see what's going on. But yeah, I think it's increasingly quite common, even at like a Christian college, even parents of students at the Christian high school are trying to wrestle with this quite a lot. So I think the one stat you could look at is maybe about 50% of men age 18 to 49 have a sports betting account now. It's much more than the population on the whole, which is maybe more like 20-ish percent. It's become increasingly an issue for young men, I would say.
You have likened sports betting in some ways to investing. Can you tell us about how sports betting works and what sort of connections you drew between it and investing?
Oh, yeah. So let's compare and contrast. Similarities. You put some money in and you hope to get ideally more money out. also there's a risk, right? You don't know for sure what's going to happen. You could win money, you could lose money when you invest in the stock market or when you make a bet on a sports betting app. The main difference when it comes to investing, say, in a company, there's this underlying generation of profit such that it's not really a zero-sum game where like it's just like one person wins, the other person loses an equal amount. With investing in stock markets, everyone can win because profits can be generated as businesses produce more and more valuable things. Companies have dividends and earnings, and that drives stock market prices in the long run. You know, on average, we're looking at least like 8% average return if you just put your money in the stock market. So there's a positive kind of net expected value there. With sports betting, by definition, it's this zero-sum game in that some people, they bet on one side of the bet. Some people bet on the other side of the bet. Some of them are going to win. The other people are going to lose. And it's roughly proportional, except the book, so to speak, they always take their cut, right? That's why they're advertising so much. And that's why they're growing so much, whether it's FanDuel or PrizePicks or whoever else. That's what Vegas has done historically. That's just how gambling works. Generally, people are on one side or the other. There can be more complex types of bets. Like, you know, you pick this team's going to win or the opposite team's going to win. Increasingly, you can bet on more complicated things, like very, very specific statistical details about teams, like this player gets this many points or who's the first team to return the kickoff. Or it can get very, very specific. It can get even like during the game, you can wait until the end of the game. And it's, say it's in the fourth quarter, you could sort of make a prediction on what's going to happen just in the last quarter. So you can bet on increasingly more things, especially with the apps. The other thing you can do is parlay bets, where you need, say, like three things to all go your way. And if you get them all right, you get a very high proportional payoff. The problem is it gets increasingly unlikely that all those things will happen the more things you add, right? Like if you think about basic probability, if the probability of your first bet being right is 50%, if you have two bets that both are a 50-50% chance, we're looking at like 25%. If you need three bets to all hit and each one has a 50-50 chance, we're looking at like 12.5%, and it just kind of goes in that direction proportionally. So yeah, the problem and the difference is that your expected return when sports betting on the whole is negative. Some people that bet win, the others lose. What someone wins is someone else's loss. And then in the middle, the platform, they take their cut. And so it's not really a good investment in that sense.
So why do you think sports betting is so disproportionately popular among young men?
That is a great question. And I'm not a sociologist. I don't have any particular expertise understanding maybe like some gender differences or just like cultural things in terms of especially young men. But I think there's something to that. Young men, I think, naturally want to go out and do things, and they love competition. They love trying to predict things. They love trying to win money. There's a very tangible process there. Like a lot of things in life, you might take a shot at something and you don't know if it's going to pan out for a long time. With these sports betting apps, you can bet just a little bit of money right now and figure out right away if you win or lose. It's a really addicting game to play in that sense. So I think some of it taps into how God naturally made us, and maybe especially young men potentially, which is good. Wanting to go out and do things and try to understand the world and make predictions and be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, to be productive, to allocate resources in a way that yields gains. Those are all good things to do. I think in general, it'd be better served if more young men looked at finance and fewer young men looked at sports betting. One other thing that I think is maybe kind of telling. So I was listening to my favorite podcast for the Green Bay Packers. I'm a pretty big Packers fan, and they keep having these sports betting ads. One quote that I thought was pretty telling is like, the feeling of being right never gets old. So that's like part of the pitch. And I think there's something to that. There's this sense of pride, and it's kind of fun to play games like that and compete. Can I figure out what's going to happen? Do I know a lot about sports? And it feels really good when you're like, I think this player is going to throw for a lot of passing yards. And they do throw for a lot of passing yards, and you get a little bit of money, and you get the psychological hit of, wow, I guess I was right. Problem with that is we tend to be kind of biased in how we look backwards. We might think, oh yeah, look, I knew it. But you didn't really know it. It was random. It could have just as easily gone the other way most of the time. They're intentionally setting it in such a way that it's basically random which side of the line the number will fall on. And so, sure, it's easy to feel like, oh, look, I know something. I'm right. I can predict things. But I think there's a danger of the sin of pride there in terms of trying to act like we know more than we really do. And that's where some of that desire to predict and understand can kind of be turned towards sin. Really, God is in control of all things. He knows what's going to happen when the lot is cast. We don't. It's random to us. It's stuff that we don't really know. James 4 says something like, you shouldn't just say, I'm going to go do this or I'll go do that and then I'll do this. You should say, if it's the Lord's will, I'll do this or I'll do that. And I think there's a little bit of pride that comes in thinking, this thing is going to happen. I'm going to predict it and make money on it, when you don't really know that. And you should say, well, if it's the Lord's will, Patrick Mahomes will throw for 250 passing yards. If not, then not. But it's not something that I really know or can predict very well.
Or the illusion of power, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Like being able to predict the future just feels like I am almost like a god, you know? I think you touched on the idea, too, of after it being struck down in the Supreme Court, you know, this ban against sports betting has maybe made it feel safer, especially if a large demographic of young men are taking part in sports betting. I imagine it would just be, there'd just be a lot of pressure more for young men to engage in this. Do you think that's true? And how has this industry targeted young men?
They've sort of gamified it with the apps. Like, I think the apps are pretty central to the problem. I don't think when you go to a casino and make a bet is a great idea either. But there's at least some friction there in the sense that you have to make the effort to drive there. And you can maybe bet on a few things. And it's a little bit more straightforward and not convenient to do all the time. And you can't bet on everything instantaneously. With the sports betting apps, it's a lot easier. And it's pretty intentionally designed to be addicting. They sort of show their hand on this when you see all the initial offers they give you, like bet $5 and we'll give you like $100 in free bets or whatever. Just get in here a little bit and we're pretty sure that you'll like this. They're telling you that it's going to be addicting. So I think they've kind of gamified it with the apps in a way that's pretty drawing, I think, especially young men, but potentially anyone that uses the apps and starts to get into it.
Well, my guest today is Josh Hollinger. He is an applied microeconomist and assistant professor of economics at Dort University and a contributor to his interview on the Gospel Coalition, Young Men, Sports Gambling, and a Better Way to Play. What can you tell us about some of these, you know, ripple effects of gambling that we don't think about? I have been told that it might have an impact on mental health, on community resources. Do you think that's true? And how do you think our listeners should consider some of these?
Yeah, so that's a great question. My expectation would be that because this is relatively recent in the grand scheme of things, I would expect that more and more research will come out. I can talk about a couple papers in economics that are still kind of on the way to being officially published that show some of the negative financial impacts. But some of the things you're talking about, I think in theory we should be able to measure at some point in terms of mental health. And I would expect that it might take some time to get better and better evidence on this, because we're looking at before and after and comparing across states that legalized versus didn't at various points in time. You can sort of use some statistical tools to say, well, this state, they have not implemented legalized sports betting. This state, they didn't have it before, but they have it now. And you can kind of do that comparison. And so we have some evidence on some of the financial things. So like just to look at the two papers that I'm talking about. The first one is The Financial Consequences of Legalized Sports Gambling by Hollenbeck and co-authors. And so they find that credit scores fall a bit, maybe just like 0.3% in states after legalization. But then you see an increase in bankruptcy and collections, debt consolidation loans, and auto loan delinquencies. All those things are pretty rare events. On the whole, it's not like most people are going to experience those things with or without sports betting, but the number of people, the raw number of people affected by those things could go up a decent amount, right? Like if it goes from 0.0003% to 0.0007%, that's like over twice as many people dealing with a specific financial hardship. I guess there's a lot of evidence starting to accumulate that there's some negative financial consequences. The other one is a paper called Gambling Away Stability by Baker and co-authors. Finds that legalization causes this rapid uptake, both in terms of more participants and more frequent bets. And betting doesn't simply just mean switching from other types of gambling to sports betting. It reduces household savings and is this conversion from, well, I could invest my money this way or just save for the future, Two, I'm going to bet a little bit more and gamble a bit more, which is not great. That's a pretty big household financial risk. And they find that it's especially important for the most vulnerable populations in terms of people that probably can't really be affording to do that. So I guess in summary, I would say the most dire consequences from sports betting are probably going to be to a minority of people. Probably most people aren't going to go bankrupt or have a huge debt or not be able to pay off their car loan or lose their house. There are some people that do get in that deep, and it's really sad. But I think for everyone, part of what we talked about in this article with the Gospel Coalition is, what does stewardship look like? So even if it doesn't lead to utter financial ruin, is this really that great of a way to use the money that God's given us? We could use money for more productive purposes in business and finance. We could give to our church. We could invest in our family. There's so many things we could use our money for. And there's so many things we can use our time and attention for as well. If you think about how much some of these groups of young men are talking about and thinking about sports betting, you can bet on everything. You can do it frequently all the time and all these little things. Before you know it, it's not just like a financial investment, but it can take up a lot of time and a lot of like what you're thinking about. And that also could detract from maybe what God's trying to do in our lives. So I get the sense that a lot of students feel like, I can kind of keep this under control. It makes the game more fun to watch. You know, I'm not going to like bet more than I can afford to lose. But the more things are kind of normalized and everyone else is doing it, the more it feels kind of safe, when really at the bottom of this, there's people that are going to be really negatively affected, and plenty of people that are at least going to be harmed or not using the resources well, even if they don't go bankrupt. So yeah, I think it is a real danger, but the more everyone else is doing it, we're very social creatures, the more it's like something to talk about. And you sort of feel like, if you're not doing it, what do you even have to say when everyone else is talking about their bets and all that stuff?
How does scripture help inform your view, speaking of this idea of stewardship? I mean, it does seem sometimes, in a lot of ways, things that we find entertaining are just money sucks. Like fireworks on 4th of July, it's fun, but it's like, it is such a waste of money, you know? How does scripture help inform your view of stewardship in this regard?
That's a big question. So this is like a lot of practical issues we face in life, in that scripture doesn't directly prohibit sports betting or even, I think, gambling in general. But there's some underlying principles that should give us at least a pretty strong pause when we think about using our money in that way. And I think the base principle, like you're saying here, is stewardship. So everything that we have is a gift of grace that belongs to us only really on loan. It really belongs ultimately to God and should be used for his purposes, for his glory, for the good of other people. And so as a result, we don't get to just do whatever we want because it's fun or because it provides a cheap thrill or whatever else. God wants us to have fun, I think, sometimes. And he's a God of abundance that offers us lots of opportunities to take joy in the world that he's given us. But we have to be careful about how we're directing that. So we've talked about pride. A desire for riches is something that's warned against just in numerous times in the Bible. The desire for wealth leads to all sorts of problems, and especially the desire for easy access to more money, winning some bet. That seems like a thing that naturally would pull on our hearts and tempt us, but wouldn't be good for us and could be maybe emblematic of a love of money that is the root of all sorts of evil. Proverbs 13:11 says, wealth gained hastily will dwindle. Even if we're thinking about how do we use our money well for the sake of building wealth for the kingdom, let's say, that usually involves kind of a lot of boring, responsible steps over time. And it's not usually a lot of big, crazy bets on things like that. So yeah, I think like the love of money is a key problem. Covetousness is a key problem. Pride, thinking we know more than we do, is a big problem. There's just a ton of data and information that goes into setting the lines on all these bets. And the people that run the books, the apps, they know way more than we do. They have way more data than we do as they're predicting all these things. And so to think that you really have some special information that no one else has and that will give you an advantage in making some sports bet is just highly unlikely. Almost for sure, whatever information you have is already baked in to where the lines are being set and what the options are for you. I think there's kind of this a little bit of ignorance and pride that goes into it and can be a big problem.
In the article, you liken sports betting to drinking alcohol, an okay thing in moderation, but like if it comes to be an addiction, then watch out. But you do also actually suggest better ways to play, just to consider. Maybe you don't even have to turn to sports betting at all. Would you care to tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, this is always a tough thing to discern. I'm not necessarily trying to say that you know, everything in moderation, like some things we should not have in moderation. I would be opposed to using marijuana in most cases, apart from maybe some like special cases for CBD, like medicinal use or something. That's a whole longer discussion. I think for alcohol, maybe in moderation, it seems like it's mostly fine, but there's ways to have certain safeguards for that. With sports betting, I think there's ways to do things kind of like sports betting that can be moderated in a way that makes sense. But I don't think that looks like using these apps that we're talking about. So, for example, you know, I talked about fantasy football. We just have a pretty small annual fee that you pay into the pool. The winner gets a prize. The second place person gets a prize. And so it is a form of gambling with money, but it's not a large amount. It's only once. There's not really like a lot of temptation for me to put in more money or to get out of control with this. It's just like a thing that I do once a year with friends. And so I think that's pretty small. Or, you know, if you talked in the article about if you had an office pool for March Madness for brackets, if you're putting in $5 into your office pool, the office is going to kind of like allocate winnings towards people that do better, or maybe the winner or the second place person or whatever. Some person might decide that it's not really the best use of their resources, and that's fine. I wouldn't tend to have as much concern about that. The thing with the sports betting apps is just how frequent it can be, how addicting it is. There's really not naturally a lot of safeguards, because you can pull it out of your pocket at any moment and bet more money on all sorts of things. And it's sort of intentionally designed to kind of keep you coming back for more each time. There's no friction and there's no natural limit to how much you're going to put in. So I think that's a lot of the key difference. But I think there's a lot of ways to kind of use our desire for having fun, predicting things together and talking about it. If we kind of keep that under control, I think there's ways to do that that can be beneficial and maybe even God glorifying in terms of building community, keeping in touch with people that you wouldn't keep in touch with otherwise. Like this fantasy football league that goes back to people that I went to college with over 10 years ago now. So yeah, there's a lot of good ways to do it, or you could just do it kind of more for fun. You could do like a survivor pool sort of thing where each person picks a team that they expect to win that week. And if your team loses, you're out. You can't pick the same team each week. And then maybe at the end, someone gets a small prize. Things like that, I think, are relatively safe and fun, as long as they don't become too time consuming or too big of a priority. But yeah, I don't think that especially the mobile sports betting is the way to go.
You made a connection earlier about sports betting and investments in some ways. Do you think there is a way for young men to find this dopamine hit, shall we say, of taking a risk, predicting the future in the stock market? And would you have any resource recommendations?
Oh, okay. So say you're looking for better outlets. I guess I would have two things to say about that. One, I think they exist, and things like trying to learn about how stock markets work and investing, like learning about investing, I think can be a great approach. Or like say you want to go into financing, investment banking after college or something like that. There's a lot of good uses of prediction. So I think there are good ways to get into that. More quantitative skills and probability and statistics are good tools that we can use for those things. I would not recommend just treating the stock market like a way to gamble. Probably not the greatest choice. The efficient market hypothesis is pretty important to consider there, which is whatever information you might think you have about a specific company, it's almost surely already baked into the price of the asset. All the people on Wall Street, they're much faster at making these investments and buying and selling assets. They're much smarter about it. They have a lot more data and information. So the general advice for getting started with investing is not going to provide the same dopamine hit, because you should just put your money into a diversified portfolio and watch it grow slowly and steadily over time. And that's not really a lot like sports betting. I think that's true for a lot of things, in that God doesn't necessarily call us to finding the cheapest thrill or the easiest way to get some dopamine hit. The long, slow, steady path is usually the faithful path. I think there's a role for tapping into some of the things that draw people to sports betting, in finance or prediction or in playing games or whatever else. If you want to just like play a game that really uses your mind with friends and there's no money on the table, that's probably an awesome way to get into some of the same things. But it's sort of like in the sense that fentanyl is probably not going to be very easily replaced by drinking a glass of wine. The most potent drug is kind of hard to beat in terms of how much it's going to draw you. And it's also just really not going to be the answer, I think. So I think it's going to be hard for people to feel like if I give up sports betting on this app, I can find something that's just as thrilling. But I think that's okay. And that's part of the process of discipleship, I think.
How do you think sports gambling will develop in the next couple of years? And how do you think our churches can equip our young men to engage well with it?
I don't know for sure. I wouldn't personally predict that sports betting is going to ruin professional sports. I just think we're in too deep. It's too enjoyable. There's too much at stake for the professional organizations to allow it to make people turn off the TV or stop coming to games. And one of the issues with the way that sports betting has evolved is that you can bet on very, very specific things and more things. If you're just worried about like a bunch of people picked this team to win, a bunch of people picked the other team to win, you could always have like the Black Sox scandal and a team decides to throw the game because of the mafia or, you know, betting incentives or something. But it's a little bit harder to do that and there's fewer things to monitor. But when we're talking about people betting on every little thing, like how many rebounds this player gets, how many points that player gets, the combination of all these things, there's just more and more opportunities for people to game things and to cheat. And I think it's going to become an increasingly difficult problem to monitor. So yeah, I think it will be an ongoing issue for sure. As for churches, you know, I would just encourage anyone that is really struggling with this to reach out for help to a counselor or a pastor, maybe something like Celebrating Recovery would be a useful resource to think about. I think it's important to acknowledge that this is something that can be addicting. It's not just like a fun thing that people do. It can be addicting in the same way that drugs can be addicting. And for people that are maybe involved but haven't lost it all yet, or people that are thinking about it, churches, I think it's just good to start with the principles of stewardship and to think about how can we use what we have to honor God and how can we find healthy outlets for the things that God has designed our brains to do. And we have to do this kind of as a community in terms of parents of high schoolers, people involved at universities and colleges, maybe especially Christian colleges, to, I think, especially emphasize that it's not just about what could go devastatingly wrong, which is important and maybe something we should think about. But even if that's not something that feels like a major risk, I still don't think it's a good use of our resources. So I would start more there in terms of how we think about this kind of theologically.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Dort University Professor Josh Hollinger. You can read his comments in the Gospel Coalition piece, Young Men, Sports Gambling, and a Better Way to Play, by going to thegospelcoalition.org. There will be no His People program tomorrow, as we'll bring you the special program, The Sounds of Thanksgiving, with Johnny Erickson Tata. Thanks for listening.